And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author, Marlon de la Torre, and his book is The Screwtape Letters and the Catechism, Recognizing Temptation, Battling Sin, and Growing in Spiritual Courage, published by our friends at Our Sunday Visitor, and available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, all things Catholic. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you, Doug.
Nice to have you here. And people would have seen you on with Jim and Joy recently.
Yes, correct.
And there was an earlier edition of this book that you showed up on with Father Mitch a number of years ago, right?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. The first version, really more of a Screwtape teaching the faith, mm-hmm. based on the catechism, just helping the educator how to maneuver Screwtape letters in the classroom.
Okay.
So it was more for educators in that respect.
Let me ask you, were you always a big fan of C.S. Lewis or of the Screwtape letters? Or
I was.
What was your connection?
High school, I had a great theology professor in high school. Okay. And he opened the door to the classics of the greats of Western civilization. He opened me to Lewis, Tolkien, Frank Sheed, Fulton Sheen. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I read Mere Christianity, I was blown away.
Okay.
And I asked him, there's got to be more to this. Tell me what else he wrote. And mm-hmm. so he said, first, digest Mere Christianity. I want you to slowly understand the concept of God from his perspective. Then you'll be ready for Screwtape letters. Mm-hmm. He's not an abolition of man, not the problem of pain, but I want you to read Screwtape. The right. moment I read Screwtape, I was floored. Mm-hmm. by this interplay, this dialogue between good and evil. And so that was my first introduction mm-hmm. to C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters, and I devoured everything I could find on C.S. Lewis. But it was really my high school professor right. who was instrumental in opening this literary door that I didn't right. know existed.
Yeah, The Great Divorce.
The Great Divorce,
one of
yes.
my favorites.
Yes.
The Screwtape Letters. Let me ask you, yep. since you're interested in education, do you yep. find that this is the kind of thing, as you were, let's say, yep. attracted in high school, is this the kind of work that you think it can appeal to young people today?
Absolutely, because it's okay. a dialogue, it's an introduction, it's something that's not evasive in many respects, and so you're looking at an opportunity mm-hmm. for any individual, whether they're 12, 15, 18, 22, whatever the pedagogy is of the student, to enter into this world of dialogue, of sequence, of thought mm-hmm. that's human on one level and divine on another. Right. So this interplay is very fascinating to any student, any child, because they want to know, all right, who is God? What does he have in store mm-hmm. for me? How do I fit into his plan? How far can I get away with something before it's called a sin? Mm-hmm. Those things happen with a student. And so they're curious as to what is my lot? What is my degree of action that I should be performing on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. Who am I to identify as a child of God? So yeah, I believe so.
Right. Also, I would think that one of the popularizers was John Cleese from Monty Python,
yes.
who did a great version of portraying the tempter
yep.
in this particular
infamous.
Work. So I think that made it accessible for a lot of people who got to listen to it that mm-hmm. way. The other thing is, I think, as an overview, a lot of the temptations that he's recommending to his dear Wormwood mm-hmm. seem to run counter to the way you would think the devil goes about tempting people.
Correct. It's not direct. It's not overt. It's very subtle. It's very it's masked in terms of a natural human condition or environment. Mm-hmm. So this is the beauty of the way this book is written and the way Wormwood is tasked with convincing the patient. You can pray, mm-hmm. but pray in a very frivolous way. Right. You can believe and honor your mother, but only on your terms.
In a spiritual way, but not in her physical condition.
Exactly. So these things are very masterfully right. written, and it's subtlety is the name of the game in this particular perspective. And right. it's people are shocked, but they're expecting more of a shock and awe
right.
with Screwtape. But no, it's basically taking the human condition and massaging it
right.
away from our Lord.
Well, even later on, we talk about gluttony and the idea.
Yeah.
It's not so much the necessarily, it can be even a delicacy of the thing.
Exactly.
Being the gluttony.
Exactly.
Even though one would not see it that way.
Correct.
Because they were in small portions.
Correct. But still.
Right.
I mean, to 20 pieces of something is, right. is just as satisfying as one.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in the beginning, you say there's a seductive voice that lurks among us, and mm-hmm. as a result of the sin of our first parents, you said the original sin opened the door to the devil, and so
yeah.
we now encounter a daily battle between good and evil in our world and in our souls, and that battle's ongoing. Do you think most people today believe that, or are you seeing people come more to believe that?
I think there's an indifference mm-hmm. in terms of that understanding. Certain people will believe in the devil if something bad happens, and so they want to put blame mm-hmm. on whatever that calamity is. They tend to say, well, how could God allow that to happen? And they immediately turn to, well, this evil is more powerful than God. That is what I encounter, and that mm-hmm. I would attribute to indifference. There's no distinction between good and evil in the person. And when you hear that, when you see that, you have to ask yourself, how is the person, what is their concept of God? What is their concept of self in relation to God? How do they view themselves as a child of God? So I think that becomes more prevalent in what I've seen over the last two decades of how people view a relationship with God, well, they view evil, or they dispel evil to be nothing more than a coincidence, or maybe just, it's just a bad day. It can't be anything related to anything else other than a bad day. And I see that seeping into this sin of indifference where you can't make the distinction between good and evil. And but on the flip side,
that's a relativistic approach.
It is, absolutely. But when there is no answer to why this calamity is occurring, then the person is relegated to think, maybe there is something here. Maybe there is something bad, that there's a force of evil that does exist, and I need to seek the antidote to that force of evil. Ironically, those who are agnostic, those who may not believe, tend to sway towards that thought, and that becomes the entryway towards understanding God, the irony. And so it is really on many levels across the board what I've encountered over the last two decades.
Right. We think also, and he talks about here, and obviously the problem of suffering, how could God allow it? You know, as one rabbi one time said, God's all powerful. He's just not, he's not all powerful, even though he's all knowing. That's why he allows sin. But we understand it from the aspect of free will.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And that's the beautiful thing. Grace abounds in everything that we do. And so when you look at free will and you look at the application of it, it doesn't mean that whatever you do is finality in and of itself. It means it gives the opening and the opportunity that while you're on earth, there is a distinction that exists in your creation. You have the opportunity to seek His grace and to manifest that grace, not just in your actions, in your intellect, in your will. The soul was manifested for that understanding of grace. So when you engage in that and something happens, what does that tell you? Even if it's bad, that means there's something inherently good towards that if you direct your actions or emotions to it. This is what Augustine...
If you have patience.
Patience, prudence, temperance, the cardinal virtues come into play. Augustine would make a reference to this in the City of God. And when you look at this disposition of the world, all right, how are you going to embrace it? By what means? Is it through despair or is it through hope? Is it through anger or is it through joy?
Is despair actually a choice?
Despair...
He talks about it as being a choice.
Despair can be something that you actively, willfully choose if you deliberately reject God. And so, yes, it could be, it could be a manifestation. But again, despair is rooted in having a lack of wisdom and a lack of prudence.
Yeah, and a lack of hope, right?
A lack of hope. So despair doesn't, is not conjured up. It is a progression.
Right. So, well, I think that's the biggest thing that you probably see in here, and even how he's manipulating him, is that, like you said in the beginning, it's all done subtly, and it's all designed to manipulate you to move in a certain direction, which makes it easier and easier for you to be controlled.
It's probably the most masterful way to convince someone that you're good, but you're really not, or give the false sense of, all right, I have sanctification, I am holy, but yet I'm still gluttonous. It's the point of, I'd rather be a good person than a holy person. I'd rather deal with the pains of the world in a certain disposition, whatever that may be, versus suffering for it. So this becomes really part of the interplay with Screwtape. Wormwood, Doug, has difficulty understanding this. When you read Screwtape letters and you read my book, Wormwood questions the methodology of Screwtape because he sees the patient being sincere, especially towards his mother, for example, and he can't conceptualize, how can I draw him away from her or get him to disrespect her, because that's his mother, that they're biologically bound. So by what means can I pull him away to disregard her or not even pray for her? And this is where Screwtape gets very angry with him, because he says, look, she's nothing other than another human being. Convince him of that, that she's just another
person. She's a sinner.
She's a sinner. Why waste your time? Remove him and have him go elsewhere to his girlfriend or to another fetish.
Right, to be distracted.
Absolutely.
Distractibility and distraction is a major thing throughout here.
Yes.
How to distract you from the good and even introduce you to people who are witty and gay, and then you think, oh, I want to be like these people.
Exactly.
You know, who have no substance to them. It's you talk about John Vianney talking about temptation in the beginning. I thought this was interesting. The quote is, by pride, by vanity, by the good opinion which we think people should have of us. That's how we're impacted. at another by jealousy, by hatred, and by revenge. So it's almost like the reverse side. One is the things about myself,
yes,
and the other things about the other people and related to me.
Correct. It's the interplay of how Screwtape views God as the enemy.
Right.
And so what is the enemy to that human being? How do you want to convince the patient to look at grace, mercy, redemption as enemies,
right,
in terms of growing in holiness and sanctity? So this becomes part of the theory from Screwtape, the interplay throughout the whole book.
Right. Now, the devil has no authority over us. You make that point. You, then you quote Padre Pio describes the devil as a rabid dog tied to a chain. Beyond the length of the chain, he cannot seize anyone. And you say, why does God allow the devil to roam on earth seeking the destruction of souls? That's what everybody wants to know. Why?
Well, you know what? It's if God's the author of life, for example, we take the progression systemically here, and that the soul is intimately bound to the intellect and the will, and that our human body is a reflection of what the soul is. So that in of itself should tell you, okay, God created me in his own image and likeness, so I have the opportunity to seek his will. That requires not just good intentions, not just good experiences, but how will I react to the bad ones? The bad one is not created because he does not love me. The bad one is created because he wants more of me through this difficult challenge. How will I respond? He doesn't want me to stay stagnant just because I'm having a great experience. Will I continue to move or improve or seek sanctity through the bad experience? I cannot be simply just caught in that situation, because if the aim is heaven, then I have the ability given by God to go beyond that bad experience, that bad emotion, or that calamity in life, because he doesn't want me just to stay there. And I think that's the key.
Even if you want to build tabernacles on the top of the mountain.
Absolutely.
It doesn't work that way.
Correct.
We can't hang out here. We're being prepared to deal with what's going on ahead of us.
That's right.
And it's important, and you make the point here, that C.S. Lewis was not Catholic. And that's important to understand, but then how do you pair them up with the Catholic Catechism?
You know what, the origin of that book, really, I was a high school principal and religion chair for many years. Sophomore year can be a very delicate year for students. They're glad they're not freshmen, they can't wait to be juniors, so they're in no man's land spiritually. So sophomore year, typically in our curriculum, was morality year. So intro to morality the whole year. My students were dreading it. They didn't want to talk about sin, morality, sin of commission, sin of omission. They didn't want to talk about human sexuality, for that matter. So I'm looking at the class, and you see this epiphany of things. You see all these different souls and their personalities and their persuasions. One of my students raised his hand, why do we have to do this? What's the point? So I asked him, well, what would you prefer? Why don't we read that book that's on your shelf? Screwtape Letters. And all of a sudden I had an epiphany. All right, guys, we're going to double down. How many of you want to know about the devil? They all raise their hand. How many of you want to know how far you can get away with sin before it's called a sin? They all unanimously raise their hands. All right, this is the story of my class. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take Screwtape Letters, which is basically a demon guiding an understudy to take and address this patient away from God.
And you said patient.
Yes, patient.
Which is how they view the person.
Exactly. And so they asked me, what do you mean the patient? You're the patient. And then from there, I told them, we're going to take the catechism of the Catholic Church, and we're going to dive into the opportunity to debunk all the temptations from Screwtape through Wormwood to this patient, and we'll see where we go. So I flipped the class. We did it the whole year. So we paralleled the catechism with Screwtape and how to prepare them to understand spiritual temptation, spiritual warfare, things of that nature. It was a big hit.
So did the person who asked to do that book, was he aware what that book was about?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit, but he didn't understand the depth of the book.
He just thought it would be more interesting. Maybe he heard a John Cleese tape or something.
Probably. He knew the book, but he didn't absolutely analyze the book. He had read it once, but really had no thought. So that opened the door.
And the enemy, obviously, in Screwtape is God.
Yeah.
You say the premise behind my book is to provide hope for anyone who has been tempted by the devil or struggled with the daily battle against sin. That is all of us. But we don't just want to see how the devil works to lead us away from God. We also want to know how we can respond to temptations in faith. And you go on to say that the deposit of faith revealed in the catechism perfectly suited to address the deposit of sin. What's the deposit of sin?
The deposit of sin really comes from the fact of original sin. It's our first act or defiance against God. So that deposit, and it's an interesting way of voicing it, because we talk about the origin of original sin, how it started, but there is a sequence to it. All right, so when you see this progression of denying the existence of God, or that you are related to God in some way, and you see this progression of original sin, right, something happened. You invested into that sin, And this is essentially what we're dealing with. So how do we uninvest in that progression? What was given to us? Obviously Christ himself being the answer. So we dive into that progression through this book. This is the aim of what we want. We want them to understand, right, there was a certain sequence, it was invested, sin happened, now we know through Christ what not to do, so we're gonna follow this progression effectively over and over again through this book.
Now, why is it still relevant? It was written during in 42, obviously, during the height of basically the Blitz and what was going on in the UK at the time. And obviously, Lewis was going through it. In fact, the story relates to someone, obviously the patient, how he ends up. Even though it's kind of odd because how he ends up, but that's actually a good thing, but a bad thing as far as Screwtape is concerned.
Chris, because you see, in the backdrop of World War II, you're hoping that that is enough to incite despair. All right, all is lost, all heck is broken loose. He has to be convinced that there's no hope. Quite the opposite. What he sees is now I have hope. There's a sense, there's resonance of who I am, that I must seek something greater than all the calamity around me. And that's something that Screwtape, for whatever reason, is not prepared for. And I find that very fitting and very apropos.
And seeing selfless acts and acting in a selfless way.
Correct. And that's something that I guess when you look at the human condition.
Now, let me ask you about the format of the book. You go through the, I think it was, what, 31?
Yeah, all 31, yes.
From the original. So chapter one, Faith and Relativism, you have a quote from it. So let me ask you first just about the format. You kind of have a... You have the quote, and then you have something called debunking Screwtape.
Correct.
Why don't you explain what that is?
Debunking Screwtape, basically taking the premise or the argument of Screwtape that he proposes to Wormwood and the patient, and then from there you begin to analyze where the flaws are in that argument, and then from there you apply the catechism into that perspective with a particular piece of church doctrine from the catechism. And so you become, the hope is to develop a creedal mindset into how to dispel these subtleties and how to really strengthen your faith, and then through a series of reflection questions and then the prayer at the end to really solidify this understanding of, you know what, this is not the end. His proposition does not tell you that you can't. On the contrary, the church has the answer
for
this.
And that's the meditation.
That's the meditation.
Okay. Well, let's look at this one right at the beginning where he points out, your man doesn't think of doctrines as primarily true or false, but as academic or practical, outworn, contemporary, conventional, or ruthless. Jargon, not argument, is your best ally in keeping him from the church. What does he mean?
Basically, the more frivolous language you can use, the better. And avoid any type of language of God or creed or anything of a commandment issue or absolute or virtue. Those are nonsense. Those are whimsical. They're not really, they don't give the person freedom. And this becomes the basic premise. Start off with a complete disassociation with God, his creed, his law, his commandment, and really develop your own. And this is what he calls the jargon.
You say here, what begins as small distractions from prayer can grow into a habit of distraction from reality. Ultimately, the devil wants to convince us there is no difference between the world with God and one without him. He also wants to basically have people not understand that he even exists, because there's, when he talks about, should he know that you are there, or are we better off working undercover?
Correct. And I think there's an undercurrent to that particular chapter where we're focusing on docility. So when you discuss prayer or this understanding of God, there's a docility that's inherent in this process. And as the person becomes more docile, all right, to an understanding of God and his will, then you start seeing things more clearly. So it's not jargon anymore. Now you see some resonance in the language. There's fruit in the vocabulary. There's more of a sense in the definitions of what God is trying to communicate with you. And the thing from book one through book five, there's an underbelly of this docility that Screwtape does not want the patient to engage in. And this is important for any reader, for any listener, is the surrender towards silence, to understand the clarity of where your position is with God, who you are as a son or daughter, is tantamount. And so the more noise Wormwood could create, the better distraction.
Maybe he'd love today.
Absolutely. So this becomes part of the interplay in the first several sequences of the book.
Right. We say here in the application of the catechism, instead of employing an argument which can sharpen both mind and faith, Screwtape instructs Wormwood to lead the patient into relativism.
Correct. Disassociate from reality, create something of an alternate universal reality.
But everything's basically okay.
It's okay. It's good. I mean, I'm a good person. To heck with sanctity, to heck with holiness and things of that nature. Again, the basic premise that's still operating today in the 21st century. This is literally what he's trying to just convey. The patient will run away, and the scripta knows this, if he is so overt and so direct that he'll question immediately and push back. He doesn't want him to push back. He wants him to at least ponder, is this a possibility? Is my way somewhat inconvenient for me, and does what Worm would propose actually more subtle or just more convenient for my life?
More pleasurable. More pleasurable, ultimately. Even though he acknowledges that God is the creator of the pleasure, it's the exaggeration of the misuse of the pleasure.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So the devil seeks to guide us to have faith that centers on ourselves rather than on God. I would say that that's a big thing that we see today, right?
If I'm more valuable than my creator, absolutely. And if my value is greater than the ability for me to surrender to the will of God, then so be it. Hence, my view of another person, my view of those around me, is more of a utility than a human being. I become utilitarian in my thought process. Right. What can I extract from you? How can you benefit me versus how can I be selfish towards you and serve you? That's essentially what
we're doing. Well, I don't want to be taken advantage of.
Course.
I've been lied to.
Correct.
I have to look out for myself here.
What's in it for me? Yes.
Exactly. And that jargoning kind of thing, even in the faith world, you know, where different meanings get poured into different words, where they don't really mean what you thought they meant.
Correct. I mean, charity.
And wokeism, we hear there's lots of that kind of stuff.
Wokeism or charity. I've heard charity associated with wokeism from this perspective. Charity is what's in it for me versus what I can give to you. And that's a complete mutilation of the word charity.
Or what somebody else can do for you rather than me doing it for you.
Exactly. and that's really what we see here.
Right. Yeah. Now, in Bearing False Witness and Authentic Conversion, he says, I note with grave displeasure that your patient has become a Christian. He goes, work hard then on the disappointment or anticlimax, which is certainly coming to the patient during his first weeks as a churchman. So somebody has a big conversion experience, they go in, and then usually that wears off, and sometimes people head for the hills.
Correct. Well, after the nice euphoria for the first three or four days, you don't see it really perpetual anymore, or you don't see the people around you living it. So you're am I wrong? Did I miss the boat? Did I misunderstand this initial grace or this initial entry into God? Why isn't someone else living the way I'm called to live? Why isn't someone else as joyful as I am after experiencing God? It's almost, you compare it to, say, OCIA, a neophyte that comes into the church, and then he's waiting for people to congratulate him, and he gets crickets.
Right.
Or
right.
There's no one there to welcome him into the church.
Right, what
happened? They just give him a bulletin and say, here, make sure you give your money this week.
Right. And even the idea of people, let's say, who many times who left the church, chasing after experience.
Correct.
And moving from one church to another, looking for that fire to be ignited, because after a while it kind of, well, this preacher, I kind of tired of him now. And, oh, they're doing something exciting over here. Let's go there.
Correct. It's more of a, instead of seeking the community of God, you're seeking the community of self, or the community of the personal theology or personal flavor of that month. And I've seen that too many times, Doug, when I hear people say, all right, I found the Lord. Okay, great, but not there. All right, so what are you really looking for in that perspective? And so you see this community of theology or community of faith being this concern.
Well, you go in search of a church that teaches what you already believe.
Correct.
Or what you're comfortable with.
Correct.
And when you become uncomfortable or disagree, then you move on.
You move
looking,
on.
Looking for the next person.
Correct.
In authentic prayer, keep the patient from serious intention of praying altogether.
Yep.
This is best done by encouraging him to remember the parrot-like nature of his prayers. That's a lot of times saying, oh, the rote repetition, the Catholics doing the rosary, they're not even thinking about it. They just go to Mass because they were told they got to go.
Correct, because it becomes more redundant in the mind of the person. There's two things with that. One, when you pray, there's docility. Two, when you are accused of being redundant, actually, it's a deepening of the grace of that prayer. You're meditating on that further communication with God. And so that can't be a negative. So it's like a parent telling a child, I told you once, I told you twice, I told you the third time, don't grab the cookie. And so you need that third time for that message to stick. The same premise with prayer. It's what we would tell parents all the time when they're trying to teach their children how to pray. They need to see your repetition. It can't be done once. If they see it in action, if they see it in a determined way and focus on something that is good and holy, that will resonate with them. And if you tie in anything that's sacred, music, art, towards toward that prayer, then now you see them begin to mimic and understand why.
Let me add, in the chapter talk about despair and hope, but also in fear of the Lord. That's one a lot of people misunderstand. I know there's somewhat mistranslation of the word fear as opposed to awe. These people understand, think they're supposed to be afraid of God. He's going to zap me with a lightning bolt or something. I might do something wrong.
It's funny. Fear of the Lord is absolute comfort with God. Mm-hmm. Because you know that He literally will protect you and guide you, and mm-hmm. that through all the calamities of the world, you can turn to Him. Human fear, manufactured fear, is quite the opposite. And since that's where the distinction that comes into play with that particular chapter, is understand the difference between a manufactured human fear and the fear of the Lord, who is all-loving, all-encompassing, mm-hmm. all-knowing, and will always give you that door to walk through, if you so choose, for His love.
Right. Also, it struck me, the patient gets caught up in factions inside. So even if he goes to the church and he's in the church, let him get caught up in one faction versus another, and they've become distracted over who's better or who's more Catholic or whatever.
Absolutely. So whatever prayer group is better for that flavor of the week, so be it. And then they'll tell you how that prayer group is not good next week. So, yes.
Right. Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Yours is nice, but it's not as good as ours. you dedicated the book to your wife. Children, Miguel, Gabriela, Maria, Gianna, and the greatest gifts a father could have.
Yeah.
Do people realize today, do men realize that their greatest gifts are their children?
You know what, it's a great question. I would say, it's a yes or no. I'd say more no than yes, if I may explain. I've done a lot of men's groups in 30 years. Mm. The singular most important thing that I've seen that they don't do, all right, they don't pray for their wife or their children. Okay. I'll give you a great point. I was leading a group of men, 200 men, going through the process how to be intercessors for their spouses, for their children. So I asked them bluntly, gentlemen, how many of you pray or intercede on behalf of your children or your spouse on a nightly basis? Doug, only three raised their hand.
Right.
And so this has been consistent over the last decade that I've encountered. And so the men will ask me, where do I begin? How do I do that?
Right.
I told him, you are to eliminate everything that distracts you from spending time with your wife mm-hmm. and everything that distracts you from acknowledging that your kids are even present. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I get this sigh and they step back because they realize that whatever manifestations that you're involved in, whatever things that are distracting you,
right.
and it's a myriad of things that we can get into another segment on, they don't want to.
Right. Well, that's the biggest thing. I always think from a couple, being a couple, did marriage encounter for a number of years.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest issue for men is always the fear of change.
Absolutely.
You're going to ask me to do something different than I've been doing, and I'm really not interested.
Yeah.
But people will be interested in this book, The Screwtape Letters and the Catechism, Recognizing Temptation, Battling Sin, and Growing in Spiritual Courage. Thank you so much.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Marlon De La Torre, Ph.D. This book is naturally available through our EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com. A fun read. Check it out. Very interesting. We'll join us next time right here on EWTN's Bookmark. We'll look forward to it. Thanks.